Audio Postcards from Earth on Tuesday, October 9th from 7 to 9 p.m. at OMSI in Portland.
Here and There, Audio Postcards from Earth is an all-ages and ability-inclusive event featuring nature sounds and field recordings in immersive surround sound from scientists and artists local and abroad from some of the world's most remote locations.
Listen to these places while sitting under the shifting stars from that time and place in nature's memory. Again, that's Here and There, Audio Postcards from Earth on Tuesday, October 9th from 7 to 9 p.m. at OMSI, 1945 Southeast Water Avenue, Portland.
More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying our habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Welcome to Voices for the Animals on your community-supported radio, KBOO Portland. This is your host, Deb Stedman, and my guest today is Michael Budke, a co-founder of SANE, or Stop Animal Exploitation Now, which is a watchdog organization that monitors research facilities for illegal activities and animal abuse. Thanks a lot for coming on the program today, Michael.
I'm happy to be here.
Okay. Hey, Michael, many animal activists have some sort of experience in their lives that prompt them to become animal defenders. I know that you started out as an animal health technician and now head a nationwide campaign on behalf of animals used in laboratory experiments. Can you share your personal story with us?
Certainly, I'd be happy to. When I was obtaining my animal health technology degree, the final year of that program essentially placed me as a student inside an animal laboratory, and there were many experiences that I had while in this institution that showed me just how horrendous animal research is. And in fact, in some ways it's very ironic. Many of the procedures and projects and kind of things that we're trying to get stopped now, and that in some instances we've been successful at getting terminated, were things that I was literally taught how to do during my education. But I think that one of the experiences I had that
was a tipping point for you,
was when I was literally just walking down the hall one day and happened to look into the wrong room, which was a laboratory where it was either rats or mice that were being utilized. And I looked in just as the animal they were working with was intentionally beheaded. And as horrible as that was, and I can literally still see that happening,
despite
the fact that that was back in the mid-1980s, what that really demonstrated to me is that laboratories consider animals to be, despite all their protestations against this idea, animal laboratories consider animals to be nothing more than objects that can essentially be taken apart and thrown away when they're done with them. And obviously, non-human animals, whether we're talking about rats and mice or whether we go all the way up to non-human primates, they are not inanimate objects. These are all mammals. They all have a central nervous system the same way that human beings do. They're all capable of feeling pain. And when they are behaving naturally, they act as though their own lives make a difference to them. They essentially try to survive. They try to keep living, so that it's clear that animals want to live, and their lives and their stories having meaning to them as individuals and as
entities in their own right. So when you and your now wife Karen co-founded SANE, what did you have in mind in terms of its main mission, and how do you go about reaching your objectives now?
Well, our goal has always been to focus in one area, because we think that one of the mistakes that both individual activists and, in some cases, animal organizations make is to try to do too many different things. We think it's better to do one thing, to focus in one area, and to be very good at that. And that's why we focus exclusively on the animal research issue. And the way that we work on this issue, which has allowed us to be very effective, is we have become probably the leading source in the entire animal rights movement for obtaining information from inside laboratories. And this includes everything from internal records and federal reports to, in many instances, photographs. And we do all of this without ever leaving our office, because we utilize both state and federal public access laws, the Freedom of Information Act, State Public Records Act. And as a result, we're able to obtain factual evidence of how laboratories are not only abusing animals, but in most instances, violating the law. And we use their own paperwork, their own documents where they admit breaking the law against them.
Yeah, I loved in you, I think it was one of your newsletters on your website, where you say that facts are weapons. But let me ask you, under the current administration, has it been harder to get USDA and other types of government reports?
Well, there were some periods where the USDA was making information less available. In fact, at one point, they had actually taken the online inspection report and animal use report database offline, such that data was not available, and it was requiring everyone to file a Freedom of Information Act request, which was significantly slowing down the process, because there was really no legal reason to withhold these records. They were simply going back in and redacting some data. But all of that information is back up online now. But really, that's only one piece of the puzzle for us. We obtain data from many other resources, and we also obtain a lot of data from the USDA that they never post online because, for example, one of the things we obtain from them in some instances is photographs that are taken to document situations inside laboratories. And as you can imagine, the federal government is not in the business of posting those kind of
things. Those are the
online
things they do not want the public to see, I would imagine. Now, I know that you do get a lot of information, because on the SANE website, it's just packed with all kinds of reference material. What might people find on the SANE website?
Well, the things that we really want people to see the most, for two reasons, are the incidents that we're currently exposing in the news media. And the reason we want people to see those things is that's the most up-to-date data that's there, and that's also where we have all of the action alerts and things that people can participate in, whether we're asking them to contact the USDA to take enforcement actions against laboratories, or contacting the laboratories themselves to try to get independent investigations launched. Because one of the things that we've learned in our work in this area is that in many instances, some of the worst abuses of animals occur with animals that actually have no legal protection whatsoever.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because the general public believes that all animals used in lab experiments are protected by the Animal Welfare Act. Can you please set the record straight for us?
Sure. The Animal Welfare Act actually excludes many animals from the definition of the word animal in terms of what happens with research facilities. Rats, mice, birds, cold-blooded animals, and in some cases farm animals, if they're being used in agricultural research, are excluded from the definition of the word animal, such that they are not counted. The parts of the facility that imprison those animals and where they're experimented on are not inspected by the USDA. And so what that really means is that the majority of the animals in laboratories, because rats and mice make up over 90% of the animals that are used, and then many of the other animals that make up large percentages of the total, for example, people aren't aware of how many birds are used in animal laboratories, or for that matter, even fish, are excluded from all coverage by the USDA, and they don't even inspect those animals. They're not even counted. I couldn't even give you a real meaningful estimate as to the number of rats and mice that are in laboratories, because quite simply nobody knows. And they are subjected to many of the worst abuses. Some of these incidents are reported to federal agencies, and we've in many areas of our work now, we are obtaining data about what happens to rats and mice, and what we're seeing is that they are very often considered to be even more disposable than other species of animals.
That is really sad. Michael, let me ask you, what kinds of violations are commonly reported then? Where do you start,
there's a very wide range of things. It depends, you know, if we're talking about the unregulated species like rats and mice, probably the most common things we see is that either they're dying because their laboratory staff neglected to do basic things like giving them food and water, or, and I don't mean to be flippant when I say this, the laboratory staff can't even kill the animals correctly, such that they're not euthanized in a way that actually causes death, and living rats and mice wake up inside carcass freezers. And
oh my gosh,
that's really fairly common. In terms of other species of animals, the range is so broad. I mean, we see large animals left in cages that are sent through cage washers. I literally just filed a complaint against a research facility about an hour ago because a non-human primate died of strangulation in a cage. Medications are misdosed. One of the things, for example, at Oregon Health Sciences University is they didn't dose diabetic monkeys correctly with insulin, and one of them died.
I want to talk about that a little later, because that's right in my own backyard here in Portland, Oregon. But so how many facilities in the U.S. are currently experimenting on animals? I know, you know, the numbers are hard to estimate because the vast majority of these animals are not covered by the Animal Welfare Act and therefore not, you know, reported by the USDA. But do we know how many facilities are actually actively experimenting on animals?
We believe that in terms of the laboratories that are registered, there's something on the order of 1,000 of them. But one of the real mistakes that people make is that the laboratories themselves are really only a part of the picture. And I'd like to use non-human primates to demonstrate what I mean by that. And that is that in laboratories, there may be something like 70,000 primates that are actually experimented on. But I would estimate that there are at least that many that are imprisoned in the breeders and dealers of animals that supply primates to laboratories. And so I would say that the actual total for the number of primates that are in the biomedical research industry is probably something more like 150,000, but half of them are in breeder and dealer situations, and people tend to miss that. And so really, the picture that the general public gets is really only a fraction of the reality of the whole situation.
So on average, of the animals that we do know that are used for experimentation, about how many animal deaths are there every year, let's say, due to abuse or staff negligence that have been documented?
One of the things that we were able to document recently is that in 1 year, and these are not animals that died in experiments. These are animals that simply died because someone did something like forgetting to feed them, or, you know, left them in a cage that was sent through a cage washer, I would say that somewhere in the vicinity of 7,700 to 8,000 animals are dying every year just from sheer negligence.
Oh, my gosh.
Not experimentation, not, you know, part of a protocol, just literally stupid things that never, ever should have even happened.
Okay, hold that thought. We're going to have to take a brief break now, so please stay tuned. We're back, and you're listening to Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland. We've been talking with Michael Budke, co-founder of SANE, Stop Animal Exploitation Now, about how his organization is confronting animal abuse in U.S. research labs. Michael, we mentioned before that there's a long list of press releases made by SANE posted on your website. How do you decide when it's time to go after a particular lab and which battles to fight?
Well, we're very equal opportunity in that way, in that if we feel a laboratory has broken the law, if we feel a laboratory has done something that is significantly negligent, we're very equal opportunity. We go after everybody.
Oh, good for you. Okay, and also in your press releases, you generally demand certain actions of the USDA in response to the legal violations found at an offending institution. What results are you hoping for, and how successful has your organization been in this regard?
Well, the law, the Animal Welfare Act, what it allows the USDA to do is there's essentially kind of a hierarchy. In some instances, a laboratory will only receive an official warning, which is kind of like a paper slap on the wrist. The maximum penalty in terms of a fine is $10,000 per infraction per animal. And that doesn't sound like a lot, and in many instances, it really turns out not to be a really significant penalty, because Even if you have a laboratory that's paying, say, a $100,000 federal fine, because, I mean, that's a six-figure penalty, and that's large in terms of how these fines are done. I'll use your local laboratory there as an example. We would estimate that the Oregon Health Sciences University receives over $100 million a year for performing animal experiments. Now, if they're fined $50,000 or $100,000, and you compare that $100 million, that's pocket change.
Yeah, cost of doing business, huh?
Yes, in many instances. But at the same time, in many instances, we have been able to put significant pressure on the system to have obtained more results than only a federal fine. For example, we were able to exert enough public pressure on Harvard that several years ago, I believe it was 2013 or 2014, Harvard closed the New England Primate Research Center, and that was a facility much like Oregon Health Sciences University, one of the national primate research centers, and those buildings that used to imprison primates at Harvard out in Southboro are now empty. We were also able to get the USDA to literally close down a facility called Santa Cruz Biotech. They not only forced Santa Cruz Biotech, and this was a long campaign for us. It literally took 8 years, but it resulted in the payment of a $3.5 million federal fine, the revocation of the Santa Cruz Biotech animal dealer license, and they were also forced to surrender their registration as a research facility, such that Santa Cruz Biotech cannot, at this point, legally have regulated species in their possession.
That's a huge victory for you and for the animals. Thank you. Well, let me ask you're up against these mammoth institutions. You must feel a little bit like David up against Goliath, and probably not the most popular person, biomedical community. Have you ever been sued or personally threatened?
We have, as an organization, we were sued once, and we were able to successfully defend the situation, and the lawsuit was dismissed. We have been threatened with litigation a couple of times, and the last time that happened, we had an attorney respond to the somewhat threatening letter, and we never did hear from that research laboratory again. But, I mean, what you're saying is true, because all of the information that we're getting out is information that the laboratories never wanted the public to see.
Of course not.
Whether it's the photographs or the documents that prove that they're breaking the law and killing animals through negligence, all of that data was supposed to sit in a filing cabinet somewhere, and the general public was never supposed to know about it. But we believe that's the most important thing we can do, is get the truth out to the public. And as a result of doing this, and we've been very successful at generating news media attention on this issue, one of the most significant things that we've seen happen in the last several years is that public opinion has turned against the use of animals in biomedical research, such that the last time the Pew Research Center took a poll, fully 50% of American adults are opposed to the use of animals in any kind of testing or biomedical research.
That is a major change, and your organization, I'm sure, has played a big part in that change coming around. Well, let me ask you, you started to talk a little while ago about what's going on at Oregon Health and Sciences University. You had issued a press release, I believe, in late August. Can you talk a little bit about that? What's happening there?
Well, OHSU is a standout among laboratories in that during a period of roughly 18 months, they have been cited by the USDA for violating the Animal Welfare Act 10 times. Hmm. Five of those 10 citations were for what the USDA considers to be critical violations, which are very unusual. And they have been connected to situations where, as I mentioned before, in one instance, a diabetic monkey was not given adequate insulin and the animal died. In another incident, several guinea pigs died following medical procedures because they were not monitored adequately during the procedure. Another instance, another monkey literally, for lack of a better term, got away from people within an enclosure and was able to hide in a certain place and became trapped there, and OHSU staff never noticed it, and the monkey died. Yeah, and another instance, a baboon's hand was fractured. And, I mean, these are the kind of things that, you know, let's just say for a minute that you don't care at all about animals, all right?
Okay.
These things don't sound like a research facility that is being well-run. These things do not sound like a laboratory that is even minimally competent to perform a research protocol. And in fact, that's one of the issues that we see very commonly, not only at OHSU, but at many other laboratories, is that the research staff doesn't follow their own approved protocols. And so the question then becomes, not only, or the issue then becomes, not only are these animals dying unnecessarily, but this is an extremely expensive process. As I believe I mentioned earlier, we would estimate that OHSU receives over $100 million a year for the performance of animal experiments. Well, that's going on at a time in the U.S. when we're trying to figure out how to pay for health care for human beings. And even just, let's talk about in the Portland, Oregon area. How many people could our federal government have provided health care to for the $100 million that went to OHSU to perform animal experiments?
So not only are they harming animals and being negligent in their care of animals, but they're wasting taxpayers' money, and there's a lot of staff incompetence.
Which could be used to directly benefit people.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Well, it sounds like there has been a demonstrated pattern of noncompliance with the Animal Welfare Act right here at OHSU and probably at other institutions as well. I tell you what, a few more minutes, so I'm sure that folks will want to support efforts like yours to put an end to animal cruelty and negligence like this. So can you please give us your contact information, and then we'll post it on our KABU program page.
Well, the easiest way for people to get in contact with us is to find our Facebook page, because most people on Facebook just look for SAEN or Stop Animal Exploitation Now, and our website is www.saenonline.org, and we try to post information, you know, our latest news coverage, which always includes an action alert, because we want people to be able to participate in and support the work. And one of the other things I would like to say is that, you know, it is important to provide financial resources as well, because all of this whole process of obtaining all of this data is very time consuming and in some cases very costly. We've had an incident recently where we obtained data out of Michigan State University, and it came up with, the documents we obtained include information on what we believe are serious animal welfare violations. But that single public records request cost us as an organization, I don't remember the exact amount, but it was in the vicinity of $600.
Oh, boy. And do you think they charge you to discourage you obtaining this information?
I think that's the case. Now, federal agencies don't. The data we get from National Health and the USDA is usually free, but a lot of the individual laboratories have begun to make the data that we can obtain from them directly. You know, state institutions like OHSU and Michigan State and some of the other ones, you know, it's becoming costly. And I would say that their goal is to try to make it so costly that it keeps the information out of our hands. But we don't intend to allow that to happen.
Well, you know, from reading everything on your website and your long history of just being a real bulldog, shall we say, in terms of sticking with this and sticking it to the institutions that deserve it, I know that we can count on you, Michael, to be a defender of animals. Okay, unfortunately, we're running out of time now. Is there anything, 30 seconds, anything else you'd like to add in the next half minute here?
Well, the last thing I'd like to say is, and this is kind of a local message there, I'd like the folks at OHSU to know that we're not going away, and they can expect to be exposed repeatedly for all of their Animal Welfare Act violations, because we believe the public has a right to know.
Exactly. Good for you. Michael Budke, thank you very much for talking with us today and for bringing attention to the horrific abuses associated with animal experimentation. This is Deb Stedman thanking all of you for listening to Voices for the Animals. To hear our past programs, just go online to KABU.FM and look under Audio Programs. And please plan to tune in again on the fourth Monday of next month. Until then, remember that you too can be a voice for the animals.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KABU Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Whiskey Dixie and the Big Wet Country, playing now through October 13th at the Imago Theater in Portland. Whiskey Dixie and the Big Wet Country is a raunchy outlaw country musical about a sexually frustrated cowgirl on a tragic comic ride from hell who will do whatever it takes to get off. Written by local award-winning and Grammy-nominated songwriter Amanda Richards and directed by Sarah Pope, this off-color comedy offers a feminist perspective into a world of dive bars, drunks, and country music. Again, that's Whiskey Dixie and the Big Wet Country, playing now through October 13th at Imago Theater, 17 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's 12 o'clock here at KBOO Portland. It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Monday, September 24th. 2018. In national news, dozens of women were arrested this morning in Washington, D.C., protesting the confirmation hearing of Judge Brett Kavanaugh. Judge Kavanaugh, facing mounting allegations of sexual impropriety, today declared that he will not withdraw his nomination. He called the allegations against him, quote, smears, and dismissed them as character assassination. Senior Republicans are closing ranks around the nominee, and they echo Judge Kavanaugh's claims, accusing Democrats of running a smear campaign to derail his confirmation. Kavanaugh's accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, is scheduled to testify on Thursday. Meanwhile, another woman, Deborah Ramirez, told The New Yorker that Judge Kavanaugh exposed himself to her during a drunken dormitory party during their first year at Yale. The National Organization for Women issued a statement saying that Brett Kavanaugh must withdraw his nomination to the Supreme Court, and he must also step down from the federal bench. If he refuses to do so, now says, appropriate investigations and judicial proceedings should commence. In international news, the United Nations has accidentally published passwords, internal documents, and technical details about websites. The mistake occurred when employees misconfigured popular project management service Trello, issue tracking app Jira, and office suite Google Docs. This made sensitive material available online to anyone with the proper link, rather than only specific users who